March session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals here in Lincoln. I'm Judge Castle. I'm pleased to be joined by Judge Severs on my right, Judge Hannon on my left. Before we call the first case, a couple of housekeeping reminders that we are streaming video and audio to the internet and preserving both a video and audio archive. And for that reason, when you approach the podium to begin the argument, I will announce a case the second time, not because I forgot the name, but because for purposes of the recording. Our first case on the docket this morning is In Re Interest of Jalen D. You may approach whenever you're ready. For purposes of the recording, this is In Re Interest of Jalen D.
I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Amy Sherman, and I represent the appellant in this case, Michael Dickin. Mr. Dickin asks that you overturn the trial court's decision terminating his constitutionally protected parental rights to his daughter, Jalen. Despite Mr. Dickin's incarceration, he has done everything possible to preserve a relationship with his daughter, Jalen. There's three elements that the state needs to prove by clear and convincing evidence in this case. Well, they either need to prove abandonment or neglect under 43-292-1 or 43-292-2, and then they also have to show that it's in the best interest of Jalen to terminate Mr. Dickin's parental rights to her. There's a few cases that I want to point out that weren't cited in my brief that I think are important for this court to consider. The first one is In Re Chance, and that's at 279 Nebraska 81. When it comes to the issue of abandonment, under 43-292-1, that case has defined that as intentionally withholding without just cause one's presence, care, love, protection, and maintenance of a child. And again, the evidence must clearly and convincingly show that. The court has further defined this as the need to show a complete repudiation of parenthood, and it depends on parental intent, and that case talks about the need to show that intent. With respect to the time period of showing that alleged abandonment, you look 6 months back from the date the petition was filed. In this case, the court discontinued Mr. Dickin's visits with the child on October 4th of 2009 over his objection and at the request of the department. And the department, the state then filed a supplemental petition on October 14th of 2009 seeking to terminate his rights. So looking back 6 months from that date would take us to April 14th of 2009. The record is clear, and the appellee cites it in their own brief on page 6. Exhibit 31, that visitation was occurring for Mr. Dickin and Jalen once a week at the penitentiary during that six-month time period. There's a few cases that I think the court could look at to compare this case to and that can be distinguished. So those cases where I've seen there was a termination of parental rights, I've looked at the facts of those cases, and I think we are able to distinguish those cases from the present case, specifically ones involving a parent who's incarcerated.
Those would Ms. Sherman, let's assume for the moment that we're going to throw in with you on the basis that the trial court was wrong in finding abandonment, but the court also found other grounds for termination, correct?
I think that's correct. The court also relied on 43-292-2. Okay. There was reference to 43-292-7, but it appears that that was directed more at the mother, whose rights were also terminated at that time.
Why don't we go to those other grounds?
With respect to 43-292-2, again, they have to show clear and convincing evidence, and merely his incarceration can't be the sole reason for terminating rights. Prior to his incarceration, the evidence showed that Mr. Dickin made efforts to see the child on a regular basis, and it was about a 2 or 3 month period that he did that. He was a student, I believe, down at Peru State College, and was also working full-time, but made efforts in those 2 months to see the child, and I think it was around 4 to 6 times. Once he was incarcerated, he immediately began asking for visits. There was a period of time when he couldn't have visits, I think when he was at a correctional center. But once he was at the penitentiary, again, the visits then started initially voluntarily, I believe, by the foster mother, and then pursuant to Mr. Dickens' request in the juvenile court. So I think he's made far more efforts than you might see in, for instance, the case of In Re Sonia, which is at 17 Nebraska Ave, 919. Another case that I think is distinguishable involves In Re Interest of Brittany M. at 11 Nebraska Ave, 104. Mr. Dickens' acts that led to his incarceration did not involve a child, did not involve the mother of this child. And really, when you review the record related to what occurred, appears to have been somewhat of a breakdown on his part. He called police himself following the incident that led to his incarceration. I think he's shown clear efforts while in the penitentiary to involve himself in the child's life. A further evidence of the fact that, well, I'll turn then to the other part of the statute.
Well, with respect to the matter of incarceration by itself is not grounds for termination, but we certainly consider the fact that he's incarcerated. You would agree?
I would agree with that,
and
yes.
We consider the length of his incarceration. We consider the nature of the crime, the victim, right?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay. And here, this man is serving a sentence for 5 felonies, correct?
That's correct.
And it involved an incident that involved considerable violence.
He held a gun to a woman's head. That's correct. It didn't result in the injury to any party. But he did threaten people with a gun.
That's the good part.
Okay. Then with respect to the 12 of 15 rule, as the court knows, that's not that shouldn't be considered a strict rule, but is merely a guidepost.
And you mean the 15 of 22?
I'm sorry. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right.
But should merely be used as a guidepost. And again, the court should look to the acts of Mr. Dickens before his incarceration as it relates to his involvement with the child and then his efforts during his incarceration in determining whether that intent to repudiate his parental rights is present. And I believe in this case it clearly is not. Again, we're asking that the court overturn the trial court's finding that his parental rights be terminated. There was not clear and convincing evidence that he had abandoned the child, neglected the child, nor was there clear and convincing evidence that it was in the child's best interest to terminate she and her father's rights to parental companionship. Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Rick Smith. I represent the appellee, State of Nebraska, in this case. The state's position is that the appellant did abandon Jalen, that the acts that led to his incarceration amounted to a voluntary repudiation of his parental rights, and led to an intentional withholding without just cause or excuse, his presence, care, love, protection, maintenance, and opportunity for displaying affection to her. Because he's incarcerated until at least September of 2012, which is his parole eligibility date, likely 2014, which is his projected release date, including his good time credit that he has now. At that time, Jalen will be almost 8 years old. It's possible if he loses his good time that the appellant could be incarcerated until the year 2022. At that time, Jalen would be 15. Until he's out of prison, and possibly for a period longer than that, he's not going to be able to provide for her the way a father needs to.
Counsel, do you agree that the issue of abandonment is largely one of intent?
I do. I think there are other things besides his incarceration and the acts that led to his incarceration that show his intent to abandon Jalen or his intent not to parent her. For one thing, he has never supported her financially. He has been ordered to make $50 a month payments throughout her life. He's made a total of one payment of $50 prior to his incarceration. There was testimony that his current wife, has been making some payments, but the appellant testified at trial that was not per his direction and that she was doing that on her own. So even his wife making the payments, it's not coming from him. It's coming from her on her own. He also works in the penitentiary. He works in the laundry room. And while he makes a meager sum in there, he also has no expenses. His food, clothing, and shelter are taken care of by the state. The money that he's making in the prison isn't going to support his daughter. It's going to his own creature comforts while he's incarcerated. So I think that shows his intent to abandon her. Furthermore, his incarceration didn't interrupt what was previously a strong parent-child relationship. The amount of contact they had prior to his incarceration was pretty limited. It was a handful of visits. None of them were longer than a week. Most of them were set up not by the appellant, but by Tony R., who is the primary caregiver of Jalen and has been throughout her life, because she felt that Jalen should have the appellant in her life at that time.
Counsel, isn't it true that the focus of an abandonment allegation is in the 6 months prior to the filing?
It is, Your Honor.
And at that time, wasn't he incarcerated and having regular visitation with the child?
He was having visits during part of that, during part of that 6 months. I acknowledge that. I would direct the court to the Nebraska Supreme Court case, In Re the Interest of B.A.G. Jr., which is 235 Nebraska 730. That was decided in 1990. In that case, the court notes that, and I'll quote them here, abandonment is not an ambulatory thing, the legal effects of which a parent may dissipate at will by token efforts at reclaiming a discarded child. The state's position is that he abandoned her from birth, and he's never unabandoned her, and I realize that's probably not a word, but the efforts that he made in prison to see her and to contact her were these type of token efforts that don't dissipate the effects of his abandonment. I think even if this court finds that he didn't abandon Jalen, there was clear and convincing evidence to support the fact that the appellant substantially and repeatedly neglected her. Incarceration can be considered as a factor for neglect purposes also. He voluntarily placed himself in a situation where he can't take care of her food, clothing, and shelter, her basic needs. I would ask the court to compare the facts of this case to the case In Re, the Interest of Theodore W., which is 4 Nebraska Appellate 438, 525 Northwest 2nd, 119. That was decided by this court in 1996. In that case, this court affirmed the trial court's decision to terminate George W. Sr.'s parental rights as to his son Theodore based on abandonment and neglect. The facts of these cases are very similar. In both cases, the father committed a crime, either knowing that he had a very young child or knowing that he had a young child on the way. Both fathers received lengthy prison sentences. Both fathers had extensive criminal histories prior to the child's birth that the court considered. In both cases, the child had visits with the father in the prison. In both cases, those visits were terminated because the child was showing ill effects from the visits. And in both cases, George W. and the appellant here both took some classes and did some things while in prison to better themselves. There are some key differences that actually make what the appellant in this case did a more egregious case of abandonment and neglect than what George W. did in Ray Theodore W. The differences are, in that case, George W. set up account for Theodore W. while he was incarcerated. He put all his earnings from his job in the prison into that account. It built up to approximately $200, and Theodore's mother could draw money from that account for his benefit from time to time as she felt was necessary. Another difference was that prior to his incarceration, George W. lived with Theodore W. From his birth until the time he was arrested, George W. was involved on a day-to-day basis in Theodore's life. In this case, the appellant was not involved on a day-to-day basis with Jalen. He never lived with her. She never lived with him. Their contact was limited and their relationship was not strong. I think that if the court follows its ruling in that case and applies it to the facts of this case, it'll affirm based on that. As far as the best interests of Jalen, it was shown by clear and convincing evidence in the trial court that it is in Jalen's best interest that the appellant's parental rights be terminated. In the appellant's brief, she argues that the state didn't prove that the appellant was unfit. The state's position is that we didn't need to prove that he was unfit. In the case that the appellant cited, which is In Re the Interest of Angelica L., 277 Nebraska 984, it says that the state needs to prove if a parent's unfit, unless they forfeited that right. The state's position is that by abandoning and repeatedly neglecting Jalen, the appellant forfeited the right to have the state prove his unfitness. However, it's also the state's position that even though we didn't have to prove his unfitness at trial, we did. He has never shown any willingness or ability throughout his adult life to obey the rules of society. He's had numerous criminal cases before and after Jalen's birth. Basically, the only time in the appellant's adult life that he hasn't been convicted of a crime for any substantial amount of time is during his current incarceration, because he's been in prison. And even during that period, his caseworker testified that he's averaged 5 to 6 rule violations per year, including one, at least one that was serious enough to warrant segregation from the general population. So he hasn't shown any ability to rehabilitate himself within a reasonable time. For that reason, it was in Jalen's best interest that the trial court terminate his parental rights. And I'd cite the case there of In Re the Interest of Joshua M. et al., 251 Nebraska 614. The other reason that it was in the best interest of Jalen to terminate the appellant's parental rights is permanency. She shouldn't be made to be suspended in foster care. At the very earliest, it would be September of 2012 when he gets out on parole. It could be as late as 2022. Likely, it'll be sometime in 2014. It's not fair to her. You know, while that may not seem like a long time for us as adults, for a little girl, that's a big percentage of her life. There was a therapist at the trial that testified that remaining in foster care indefinitely would have a negative impact, or could have a negative impact on Jalen. She further testified that it would be traumatic to Jalen to change her placement in 2 to 3 years from the time of trial, which would be roughly the time that Mr. Dickin gets out of prison, the appellant gets out of prison. Basically, she shouldn't have to await his release. She shouldn't have to await his ability to be a parent, because that day may never come, that he's, even after he's out of prison, he's never shown any ability to parent or any willingness to obey the rules of society that would help him be a parent. Furthermore, Jalen is in a solid placement right now. She has lived with Tony R., who is her foster mother, her entire life, since birth. When she was taken from her mother's care, HHS placed her with Tony R., which was already where she was living. Tony has always been her primary caregiver. They have a loving relationship, and Tony testified that she would be willing to adopt Jalen if these proceedings result in a permanent termination. For those reasons, the state would ask this court to affirm the decision of the trial court in terminating the appellant's parental rights. Thank you.
Thank you. How much rebuttal time remains?
2 minutes. Just a few points. There's no question that Mr. Dickin recognized his acts at the time of the trial and took responsibility for those acts. There was testimony that the foster mother initiated the visits that Michael had while he was in the penitentiary. The record reflects otherwise. She testified that Michael initiated the visits by writing letters to her. That's at 49, line 22 through 25. She also testified that he initiated visits prior to his incarceration. I believe that's at page 50, lines 5 through 8. One of the things that's important here to ask is, why are we permanently severing this relationship between this man and his daughter? Is there a reasonable alternative? And I think there is a reasonable alternative. One of the aspects that makes this case unique is that the mother's rights were terminated, but the foster mother of this child is essentially acted as the mother of Jalen's mother. And so they will continue to have a relationship and contact by virtue of that. But Jalen is not with any family, biological family. Certainly, placement with Mr. Dickens' wife would eliminate the need for a transition at some point in the future. Or placement with Mr. Dickens' family also might be a way that he could continue to have some parenting ability with the child. And the cultural background of the father and the child, I think, is also important. Repeatedly at trial, when the trial attorney tried to raise that issue, there were objections made and many of those sustained. As a society, I think when this is a constitutionally protected right that a father and a child have to one another's companionship, we should ask about those reasonable alternatives. And I think there were reasonable alternatives present here that the state did not pursue for whatever reason.
Do you think that we have the ability to order such an alternative disposition?
I believe the court has the ability to remand the case and ask the trial court to investigate those other alternatives. And certainly there's case law from this court, even in 2010, discussing the need for that, to consider those alternatives. So I believe this court could do that on remand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The cause is submitted and counsel are excused. Second case on the docket this morning is Bowers versus